Wecker, Commissioners, for the record, my name's Guy Norman. I am the Regional Director for the Department in Southwest Washington. With me today is Ron Roller, Columbia River Policy Coordinator, and Brad James, who manages Main STEM Columbia projects, including Sturgeon and Smelt. They're going to give the presentation today. I'm here to engage in any discussion and questions that may arise. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ron Roller.
Good morning, still, Commissioners. We're here to present status of Lower Columbia River Sturgeon. Actually, the purpose of this meeting is to provide the annual review on stock status and fisheries included in the Commission policy C-3001, which is Lower Columbia River Sturgeon Management. A little bit of background. The Lower Columbia River white sturgeon population inhabits the Lower Columbia River and tributaries below Bonneville Dam and includes fish that migrate to marine areas, coastal bays, Puget Sound, and their tributaries. Populations above Bonneville Dam, including the snake and Upper Columbia, are not are there separate populations that are not included in this briefing. The annual review topics are recommended management changes, other pertinent information, review of in-season management actions, accounting of fish left unharvested, review of harvest outside Lower Columbia River, bycatch in all fisheries, predation rates, and stock status. Just to cover a couple of these, there was no retention fisheries in 2014, so we have no fish left unharvested, so we don't have to account for any of those. As far as bycatch, our monitoring included tanglenet and seine fisheries, and that data has not yet been compiled. Policy guidance for 2014. Essentially, for 2014, we had retention was prohibited in the Columbia River below Bonneville Dam, the Washington coast, Puget Sound, and their tributaries. Essentially, everywhere that our population exists in Washington and Oregon, from starting in January 1st, 2014. The Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission adopted the same measures for tributaries below Bonneville, Oregon coast. And angler participation dropped in 2014 by 90% in the estuary and 82% in the rest of the river. The slide shows harvest outside the Columbia River. There's still one data point that we don't have, which is Oregon coastal sport for 2013, and of course there's nothing there for 2014. So you can see that harvest has kind of declined outside the Columbia through the years. Population assessment tools. Abundant assessment is a two mark and capture approaches. The historic approach samples harvest for tag recoveries. The result of doing that causes a 15-month delay in results. The new method is the set line method. You get results within a few months of tagging, and it includes most size segments of the population, so there is no lag time with the set line estimations. We also use Sport Fishery CPUE, which we didn't get a lot of last year. We had some some catch and release fisheries, but tough to spread out and tough to monitor. We also have sub-yearling age zero productivity indexing. P- Population estimates of legal-sized fish. You can see that the numbers have gone down. They bottomed out in 2012 and started rising back up again. The projected population for 2015 is 138,200. Recent trends in abundance of legal-sized fish. Essentially, we've been building back towards the 130 to 140,000 fish range we saw from 1998 to 2007, after the low that we had. Population estimates, spawner-sized fish. The abundance of spawner-sized fish is currently below the Oregon Plan conservation status threshold of 3,900 fish. It appears that sufficient numbers of subadult fish have already escaped the fishery to allow the spawner-sized population to increase above the threshold within a couple of years. We'll look at that some more in a little bit. Fishery catch trends. You can see that it's been over the years up and down, and it had been on an upswing for legal size sturgeon. The CPU had been rising. The sublegal CPUE had kind of flattened out and unknown where it was going to head, but it was kind of a flat trajectory at the time. And of course, no data for 2014. Predation of white sturgeon. You can see that predation peaked in 2011, and we've seen a big drop-off. It's unknown what caused this drop-off, but there's speculation of large smelt returns. Took some of the pressure off the white sturgeon, also could have spread the sturgeon out throughout the river, made them less susceptible to predation by sea lions. But anyway, we're looking at a lower number now. Annual growth rates. We are right now in a period of fairly high growth rate. Since 2006, growth rates have been higher than the norm, and in fact, approaching 10 to 11 centimeters per year, which is fairly significant growth. What it does is it changes the time that they move into both the legal catch population. They move in there sooner, and then they move out of there also sooner. So it just increases the speed in which that the sturgeon moves throughout the range of the population, the legal size and into the spawner size. This is a slide that you are all familiar with. It's the sub-yearling production index. What we've done is provided another way of looking at it. The top one shows the catch per net, and then the bottom one shows the proportion of positive sets, meaning a lot of these sets out there are zeros, or you can have some large ones. So you can have hot spots or zeros. And so what this does is the bottom one allows you to look at dampens the results of zeros and hot spots. So that kind of gives you more of a I would say more of a realistic look at how it works. If you hit some hot spots, and you can have a real large number in your catch per net, but just a different way of looking at the same data. Set line catch frequency by size. We've included 2 years here in the packet we sent out earlier. There's 5 years listed here. Comparing the 2 years, you can see 2011, you had a lot more fish in your sublegal size category. That's, in fact, real. The smaller size was real heavy. Not so much fish in your legal size, and you can see that above the legal size, you didn't have a lot of fish ready to recruit into the spawner population. The difference now in 2014, you have more fish in your legal size category. Like I said, it's 138,200, but you also have to the right of the legal population, you have those fish that have not entered your spawner population but are getting ready to move into that within the next few years. The 2014, the smaller size in the sublegals is starting to show what might be a hole. It's probably our weakest data as you move, because they're not as susceptible to set lines as the bigger fish. So we have to make adjustments and try and make everything equal. But we're still working on that. So, but it does look like there is a hole on the small end of size. So we've got to make sure we prepare for that. We'll be watching that and see how accurate that is for the future.
Okay. Excuse us. Commissioner Mencken.
You said that this is not the best data.
No, I might have said that. What I meant to say is the set line works well on certain groups of fish, the legal-sized fish, the oversized fish, but as you move into the smaller fish, it doesn't work as well on them, so we have to make adjustments to the catch, which brings that up to what we think that it should have been. So at the smaller the fish, the least confidence we have in the data. So we have a lot of confidence in the data from, say, from 97 centimeters up, but as you move below that, the selectivity of the gear causes problems. So we've make adjustments for it, but we're not as it's not as robust data back there.
Do you have better data?
No, absolutely not.
So in light of the fact that you don't have better data, this is the best data available.
This is the best data.
Brett, can go ahead and expand. Maybe I can expand on this a little bit. So in this presentation, at about the 54 to 60 centimeter size class, we've graded that area. That's the segment that we're wondering if we're completely accounting for the adjusting the fish to catch upwards to totally account for how they're represented in the population. Once you get above that level to, say, 60 centimeters and larger, I think we have pretty high confidence that we're able to adjust for differences in vulnerability to the gear. And so I would say from 60 centimeters on up until you get to the very large fish, we're accurately representing what's out there in the population.
But from 60 to 74, you've still got a hole.
And correct.
You're saying that that's better data.
Right. So, exactly. If you look at, I don't know if this is, doesn't sound like it's working. If you look at the 2011 data and you compare the 60 to 74, you see just the numbers just increasing as you move left to the smaller size fish. Mm-hmm. And you look down below, you see it actually dropping off. And so that's the major change between those years. And I think that's legitimate.
Guy wanted to make a comment first. And then.
Thank you, Chair. Well, just to add one thing, and I'm just trying to relate this back to a previous graph that showed the growth rates at somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 centimeters to 10 centimeters per year. So if one were to look at that data that we have less confidence in because of the selectivity of the gear, and Brad indicated somewhere around 60 centimeters. You're looking at somewhere around 4 years before they get to the legal size slot that's between those bars. And so with the annual measurement of abundance, you gain confidence over time, so you have an opportunity to kind of understand what really happens before they get to the legal size slot.
Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
But what you're saying here is the reproductive animals in the population have been missing pretty much since 2011. I don't see a big jump up in 2014 on this graph here. And isn't that the reproductive population that's producing the juveniles, your recruitment at the lower end?
Correct. You know, so Ron referenced that the broodstock size population currently is averaging below 3,900 fish. So that, you know, so it's at a low level. We suspect that going back a decade or so, it was a larger population. And so, so we're at a low point in the number of spawners out there. So we're also going through a period of lower production.
Yeah.
And maybe one other point to take advantage of now that we have the slide up. When Ron showed you the sub-yearling production, the year 2009 was the one peak year that stood out above all the rest. We're starting to suspect that that's the 54 to 60 segment in the 2011 chart, those fish showing in. So the moderate level sub-yearling index values preceding 2009 apparently are what has been driving this recent increase in recruitment to legal size. So it's seems like it's been relatively decent production up to about 2009. And then since then, the index values are much lower.
Okay.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just looking up at this graph, and I see on the left-hand side the smaller sizes. They're shaded in gray. Is that kind of the area where you are kind of making some adjustments in terms of what you think is really there?
That's the area that we have the least confidence in our adjustments. There's adjustments made to because these are not really suited for this gear type necessarily at a smaller size, so we make adjustments to compensate for that. And the gray shaded areas, the area where we think that we're not as confident. But it is, I mean, Commissioner Mankin did say that this is the best data that we have, and we're fairly confident of the stuff.
Okay. I think there's another. Director Anderson?
So, I was surprised relative to the degree of the decline in predation on that the previous graph. So I'm happy to see that, but the degree to which it declined was pretty stunning. And it's, so when I think about what effect, I mean, I would think that having a lot of stellar sea lions preying on these fish, and if we have seen a significant decline, that there's also not only the issue associated with those fish being taken or killed by the predators, it's the stress associated with being constantly having the constant potential of having one of those things eat you. So I'm just wondering also about the productivity of the fish. Do we, I mean, we see a few more showing up in the oversized category. What do we know what kind of environmental factors have an effect on the productivity of spawners? And has any of that changed?
Director Anderson, I can't speak directly to any studies that have looked at the stress from this new predation that's out there. The limited work that's been done relative to stress evaluations happen to be related to two fisheries. The recreational fishery that was targeting oversized fish, and then adult fish that were being captured for evaluation to include in a hatchery program. And those events definitely introduced stress to the fish. And so I wouldn't, I would conclude that being preyed upon or harassed is also elevating stress levels in these fish. We have concerns that elevated stress levels for a long enough period of time can trigger reabsorption of eggs and that type of thing.
Okay. Go ahead, Guy.
Thank you. Commissioner Chair, I can't help myself. but just kind of a follow-up on the predation itself and this trend of dropping. Just to put it into context, this is just observations at Bonneville Dam, so it does not include the entire river. I do know that when it peaked in 2011, ODFW did an independent study that estimated the entire river to be somewhere around a 10,000 predation, so you can see that's 3,000, and that was just for part of the river. Some of the, and we have no information that to back it up, but there is some assumption that because we've had the smelt return strong in the last 2 years, could have done a couple things. One, distribute sea lions away from Bonneville Dam, actually targeting smelt and therefore not needing to eat sturgeon because they do have some nutrition with smelt. And then, of course, the sturgeon themselves may have redistributed as well as the sea lion. So maybe some reduced need for consumption by sea lions plus redistribution of the sturgeon as well, perhaps.
Commissioner Smith?
Just a quick question on that. Has it been shown that either sturgeon or the smelt are the preferred food fish for the sea lions?
Commissioner Smelt, I might turn that over to Brad, but I don't think there's any specific studies except for we do know that they, they do smelt and a number of other species are part of the sea lion's diet. And I think I'm just taking the leap that when we had, 16 million or 16,000 tons of smelt in the Columbia last year, that was probably a pretty easy and desirable source.
Okay. We're working on finding our spot again. Okay, production and recruitment. Sub-yearling index survey, both indices show peak production in 2009, followed by the four lowest years, just with differing magnitudes. Unknown how you're surveyed compared to historic production. So we're still gathering information on that. Setline size frequency, the 2000 year class may have shown up in the 2000 set line catch. As Brad showed you earlier, the little bump that occurred in 2011. Production of smallest juveniles has declined since 2011. So once again, it shows we had good numbers in 2011 and possibly that production dropped with lower catch per set. And likely in the middle of a period of decent recruitment to legal size, that 2004 to 2009 sub-yearling production, and maybe a bit before, to be and that's going to be followed by a decline in recruitment to legal size. Once again, that's the hole that we're and that shows up in 2014. Okay, that was the end of that slideshow, but I think we wanted to add a couple more things to talk about where we're at. We added some more on a little bit on harvest. We'd talked a bit about this in the past. This graph shows the three different harvest scenarios. The 13.6 is the harvest scenario that last one we had when it was open. We also looked at a 10,000 fish harvest, which is right around 7%, and the other is a 5%. And this shows if you run a fishery at either of these 5%, 10,000 fish, or 13.6%, this is how things diverge between no harvest and those over time. So this would be a harvest each year at that level. You can see it does diverge. They move apart some as you move along, but it's not. It doesn't show a big drop. And this shows spawner size abundance under the same harvest scenarios, and you can see that the population is rising. Part of that rise is the stuff I was talking about. We have a bunch of fish that have moved out of the legal size limit and have not moved into the spawner population. Plus, we have a lot of fish within the harvest slot that we're moving through. We'll be moving through. In fact, part of the deal in this harvest slot, the 138,000. What makes that, I guess, a little bit different than what we had in the past when we were looking at some very similar population sizes, is this population is probably leaning more to the right of the legal size slot rather than front-loaded with smaller size. It's loaded towards to the rear compared to what most populations were in the past. So that means fairly quickly we're going to have fish moving into the moving out of this legal size slot and into the spawner size, and so that 3,900 should increase fairly quickly. And in fact, if you follow this line out in 2021 with no harvest, we're looking at about 7,200 fish in the population. With a 5% harvest, about 7,000 fish. With a 10,000 harvest every year, about just under 6,800 fish. And if you went all the way up to 13.6% harvest rate, that shows a population of spawners of 6,600. So it's harvest will take some, especially if you're taking 13.6, which with this population, I think we're all in agreement that's more than what we would be looking at. It's too high, but you can see that if with some harvest, it's not going to change your number of spawners that much. Yet will give us it'll keep the public's interest within sturgeon and also give us data points to work with in the future. Okay, the last slide is it's a rolling three-year average, and that's what the population is based on. It's Oregon's conservation. Conservation plan criteria is a three-year rolling average, and essentially we're looking right now at the average 2013 to 2015, about 3,500, And with no harvest, 2019 to 2021, 3-year average, we're going to be over 6,000 spawners. If we have a 5% harvest each year, we're still over 6,000 spawners. If it's a 10,000 harvest each year, we're just going to be just under 6,000 spawners on a 3-year running average. So that's kind of where we're at. We're things are not bright, but yet we have a group of fish that are getting ready to move into our spawner population.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it was, my days are kind of getting mixed up here. I think it was Thursday we met the Fish Committee, and I think you guys said that you and Jim, and I'm not sure who else, were going to go meet with Organiticus. I'd like a little sense of what their views are and the commentary between the two states.
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. I did meet with Oregon representatives yesterday, and one of the topics we covered a number of topics, was sturgeon management and perspectives of ODFW relative to both the situation in terms of stock status and then the potential for when or if we should contemplate any harvest in 2015. Oregon has represented a lot of the same conservation concerns that you've heard today. Concerns with the current status of the spawning population, as well as this potential hole in the sublegal status, and how big is that? And there's some uncertainty with that, and we should gain more confidence over the next few years in terms of what that hole is. And then, of course, the sturgeon predation situation too, which is a recent year add-on in mortality on these fish. And with those same kind of conservation concerns, Oregon also expressed some interest in looking at some low level of sustainable harvest that was consistent and didn't compromise our conservation objective, which is primarily making sure that we grow that spawning population. Encouraged as we are by the pulse in the legal size population, and also there's a recognition by both states that one of the conservation steps that was taken quite some time ago was reducing that upper size limit from 6 foot down to 5 foot. And we're seeing some of the benefits associated with that group of fish that we're seeing that are going to move into the spawning size over the next few years. So we did discuss the benefits of having some low-level base harvest that enabled the excitement and the interest in recreational fishing to not be lost and be maintained on the Columbia River. And one of the things we talked about was the angler trips going from about 150,000 in 2008 down to about 40,000 in 2013, and then with only catch and release fishing on the Lower Columbia down to 2,600. Thinking that, at least we talked about, is there a way that we could look at a low-level fishery that would generate some interest without compromising our conservation objectives, and maybe being a segue into sort of restructuring how we look at Columbia River recreational fisheries. One of the things that we talked about was the idea of permit fishing, whereas similar to hunting draws, that maybe there's a low level of harvest allowed, perhaps this 5% rate, and it would be accompanied with at least, and I don't know if we could accomplish that in 1 year, because I think we need legislative action, if I'm thinking about this correctly, but some permit fishery. We actually had a conversation with Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association yesterday, an annual meeting, and Ed Bowles from Oregon was there as well as myself. We did not get into the details about sturgeon management, but actually there were guides there that expressed interest in a permit-type fishery with the notion that even if only one person on the boat had a permit, that they would draw perhaps family members that could catch and release while they're working on the one fish. So some sort of a notion that there could be some restructuring of the and bringing back some angler trips that are pretty important to the communities down there. But that was just a conversation we had. And
thank you, Guy. Ron, can you go back to slide 16 for just a second? If we're looking at the legal size sturgeon, comparing 2011 to 2014, can you look at that data, or can you extrapolate what that percentage of increase in legal size fish is?
So I think where we came from was it was either 11 or 12 that we were down to 72,000 legal size fish. And in 2014, the estimate is 131,000. So not quite double, but almost.
Is that right?
Any other comments, questions? You're not looking for any guidance from us at this point, so but you will be coming back in January?
I have one last thing that I should mention. We just had our recreational advisory group meeting and commercial advisory group meeting. We had a presentation on this. At we had kind of a mixed on this. Some say that we should probably leave a no retention. Others say yes, we need to have some fishery. And then we had the group in the middle said, well, the biologists need to look at it and determine if we're all right to have some, then we should have some. If not, we shouldn't be fishing. So, you know, it was kind of a mixture on both groups.
Guy.
Thank you, Chair Wecker. And I shouldn't, as in the discussion with Oregon, I shouldn't miss this point sort of process. Oregon is yet to discuss management in 2015 with their commission, so they are yet to do that. So they plan on doing that likely in January or perhaps even before. In terms of making decisions for 2015, ideally, typically, if indeed there is going to be a harvest, try and set that in the late January compact hearing, and then so they can plan for the future. And in fact, the sports fishermen like us to have seasons in place by the time there's the Northwest Sports Show, so that guides and charter boat folks can advertise trips. But even if we can't get to a decision on 2015 management, if indeed we were considering some low-level kind of a harvest, I think there's time beyond that, if necessary, to make a decision than we, you know, the time frame we typically do.
Okay. Anything else? Very good briefing. Thank you all.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Okay.